Coming up today on the Nosebleed Seats podcast with Zach Wolchuk and Eric Chiafalo, we recap the greatness that was the George Templeton rant on Peter King.
The rat.
And we get into a little bit of housekeeping, NFL news, and notes. As always, we do some Cowboys conversation with an article from Bob Sturm of The Athletic regarding some of the changes the Cowboys need to make to succeed that were their biggest weaknesses in 2018, as well as Kellen Moore's comments on the upcoming offense for the 2019 season. And we wrap it up with a list from NFL.com on the projected top 10 offenses for the 2019 season. So stick around to the show everyone can afford to listen to, the Nosebleed Seats.
Yes, well, Chuck, but before we get to the show, got to talk to our great listeners about our great sponsors, and that is Lone Star Green CBD. These people are amazing. They've changed my life over the last few months. It's been amazing having them support our show. We support them. I know you've been jumping into those bath bombs like a crazy person, and you smell great, you look great, and I know you feel great. The tincture oils, we know about those. The peppermint, my God, I burp frickin' peppermint beauty all day long. It actually tastes good. It smells good. You'd be surprised.
I'll tell you what, it smells like kolaches in here, but that's besides the point. That's not even half as good as that peppermint tincture oil smells.
You're damn right.
From Lone Star Green CBD. Again, folks, just go to LoneStarGreenCBD.com. If you're not sure what you want, go through. They've got a wide selection, and it is ever-growing. If you have any questions, just reach out to them. They will be happy to help you just like they have us for these last few months that they've been open. I know what you're thinking. Why can't I just go to my local CBD store? I'll tell you why. Because you're not going to get a 15% discount, my friends, and you're not going to get the quality and the ease that is Lone Star Green CBD just showing up to your doorstep. All you do, go to the website, LoneStarGreenCBD.com, use our promo code NBS15. That's NBS15 for 15% off on your next order.
Oils, topicals, bath bombs, everything you'd ever want. It's there, LoneStarGreenCBD.com. And what do you do when you get there? Well, Chuck,
tell them the Nosebleed Seats sent you. It's about that time for some Nosebleed Seats to show everyone can afford to listen to. I'm Zach Wolchuk alongside Eric Chiafalo. What up, Chi?
What's up, Wolchuk? How are you, brother?
Doing good, my homo.
You know what's crazy? Off to a rocking start. It's crazy the quick turnaround we had this week. So we were in here making sweet, sweet love on Friday / Saturday, and then boom, we're back and better than ever on Tuesday. And it feels good.
I like having the quick turnaround.
It's like kind the short of refreshing. Week. Like if I was in the NFL and I played on Sunday, let's go play on Thursday. Let's get that prime time.
My body
game.
Feels good.
A little Toradol never hurt nobody. I had that Toradol action on Mother's Day. She actually hooked me up with
How'd
the gift.
How'd you use it? Was it like an injection in the buttocks?
It's if butt chugging is an injection, then absolutely, brother.
Huh.
Just gets in your stream faster.
As always, we are powered by the Pro Football Network.
It's an efficiency thing, Wolchuk.
You can follow them on Twitter at PFN365 and make sure you check out the glorious website, ProFootballNetwork.com, where you can find conference breakdowns, division breakdowns, glorious articles, NFL post-draft articles. We've got a data lab, a film room, and then, of course, all the podcasts. And by golly, do we have the best freaking podcasts, not only ours. But you can follow at Temp the Rat. That's our homie George Templeton with The Future Is Now. The Gridiron Throne with host Corey Ashburn. You can follow him at Ashburn PFN.
My ash is burning.
You're darn freaking right it is. We've also got the AFC North and Goal podcast with Travis Yates and at @call_me_SOS. And Rising in the East with Eric Wiedeke at @Eric_Cam. And our podcast director at Samurai Radio. That's Mr. King Kai.
The man of the hour.
He's just the best.
Actually, the man of the hour is George the Rat.
Yeah, so George listened to our Saturday show, in which we poked a little bit of fun at Peter King's comments, just ripping Joe Theismann.
In one of the most...
Or is it Theismann?
actually, that's a great question by you. I think it used to be Theismann.
I think it was Theismann, and then he went ahead and changed it to Theismann to rhyme with Heisman as he tried to win the freaking Heisman.
Yeah, and we had a similar situation with Tyrod Taylor. Remember, he ended
Is
up being
Tyrod or Tyrod?
It ended up being Tyrod.
And his mom says Tyrod, so we went ahead and said, okay, well, then it must be Tyrod.
Yeah, and we've had a handful of these, you know, back in the day. Obviously, we had Buckus change his name to Dick Buckus.
I hate Joe's.
And so, yeah, this is definitely not unprecedented in the NFL.
No, it's not unprecedented at all. However, while attending the University of Notre Dame, that's another one. Is it Notre or Notre?
I think it's Notre.
Notre.
Yeah.
Notre Dame.
Well, there's the accent on there, isn't there?
Well, the bottom line is Peter King was not too keen on Joe Theismann and the reports that he made about Joe and the rift with Dwayne Haskins wearing his number 7. And we just kind of went ahead and...
We just read the quote.
We read the quote and laughed about it.
Where we went piece by piece, line by line, the beautifully written Peter King, or as George Templeton likes to condescendingly call him, Pete King, goes through and just, without using foul language, actually throws the word silly in there once or twice, completely throws the word dilfer in there once or twice, just eviscerates and completely disparages Mr. Theismann. And we thought it was hysterical, and we had to bring it to the show because of that. But you and I, we barely even know Theismann's last name. We know nothing about him. We've watched him play one time. It was one play, and on the play, his leg exploded. That's all we know about him. And so we didn't have an opinion on it.
Look, aside from the leg injury and knowing that he was a Washington Redskin quarterback, I knew he was great in college. He's in the College Hall of Fame. Yes, I knew he won a Super Bowl and played in the Canadian Football League. But my memories of him were being not that great in the Sunday Night Football booth. And
so,
the one
at.
Season that he had in the Monday Night Football booth with Tirico and Kornheiser. I never thought he was good. And then if you remember when they first put Thursday Night Football on NFL Network, he was in there with Bob Papa and Matt Millen. And, again, didn't think he was very good. So, personally, as a human being, I can't necessarily vouch for Joe Theismann/Theismann, and I am a Cowboy fan, as George noted. George, take it away in what you thought about our comments on Saturday's show.
And this was talked about on the nosebleed seats on Saturday with Zach Wolchuk and Eric Chiafalo. And I was not very happy with their take at all. I was not surprised by it because, you know, Wolchuk's a Cowboys fan, and I just don't expect him to know better. And, you know, Chiafalo, I'm going to chalk it down to the Miami Dolphins have been horrible for a long time. And that kind of – and I know this too. That kind of mind-numbingly awful NFL football, and I know this is a Redskin fan, so it's not like I'm taking a shot at the Dolphins. The Redskins have been just as woeful and inept the last quarter century plus. It can warp your fragile little mind. I can say that because it's warped my fragile little mind. Yet here I am doing this podcast with you. But you know, Peter King, if you're not going to be honest about it, if you're not going to sit here and at least do some research, if you're going to betray a complete lack of understanding of how it works, a lack of context for the stats, and even a lack of understanding of how the situation came about, why don't you just shut the hell up? There are 31 other teams. You can have bad takes and hot takes about. Why don't you just not talk about the Redskins then and leave it to the people that actually know what the hell's going on instead of that? You're now in John Mara's class as far as I'm concerned.
He's a mean, vicious, nasty, no good, baggy-eyed, marble-headed ignoramus.
And you know what else? This is what you can do too.
Kiss my entire
egg. You jerk. You absolute, complete, and utter jackass.
That is so great. Okay, so what we did there was basically we pieced together. George took about 30 minutes. Like, his entire podcast, basically, once he got the compensatory picks and signing draft picks out of the way in the first, I don't know, 10
Four
minutes
seconds.
Or so. The rest of it was all about
Pete King.
What we brought up about Peter King and how
it's Pete.
Pete, okay, and how it really chapped his gears. So the beginning of it is just kind of how he set it up just by referencing how we had talked about it. I love what he said there. Basically, like, I expect nothing less from the Cowboy fan that is Wolchuk. And yeah. He's right. I mean, he's self-aware. I love George for that. George just seems like I think he does a great job on his podcast, The Future Is Now. I think he's got a great football mind. I think he does a great job of being unbiased the majority of the time, but also showcasing his Redskin love. And he calls it like he sees it. So obviously he knows. I'm a Cowboy fan. I'm certainly not going to jump to the defense of Joe Theismann. And I love how he saved himself, because the people that work here at the Pro Football Network, are the majority of them are Dolphin fans.
Yes.
You are included in that.
That is correct.
So before he went too deep into the anti-Miami Dolphin well, he kind of like retreated just in time.
Yeah, he walked it back. He compared himself. Hey, it's okay. The Redskins suck ass too. It's not just the Dolphins, but you have a fragile mind and you don't know what you're talking about, Chiafalo.
Well, he's right
about
that.
And he was pretty much, yeah.
Pretty spot on about everything.
Yeah.
And then towards the end of it, I thought was the best part of the rant.
Was it the jerk?
You jerk.
Or was it the jackass?
You absolute, complete, and utter jackass.
The jackass was great.
See, I'm a jerk guy.
You're a jerk
guy? When he comes right into the jerk, I'm like, yeah.
You jerk.
You freaking get Pete King right now, George.
Just leave the Redskins out of your
mouth.
Tell
him like it is.
It to the Redskin aficionados out there.
You absolute, complete, and utter jackass.
Pete King, in his disparaging of Theismann, did not use any foul language. And that's my only bone to pick with George.
George didn't really either.
He called him a jerk.
Oh,
I mean,
dude.
Come on, man.
The amount of stuff that we say on this show, I think jerk is pretty PG.
No, man. I mean, Pete King was just saying silly. Now, granted, actually, I'd rather be called jerk than Dilfer. I guess that's fair. You know what? Good point by you.
Really, I didn't dig very deep into the statistical facts of what Peter King had to say. Now, that's pretty much what George did. George went in there and made a great argument for Joe Theismann in his defense.
Theismann.
And pointed out, basically, like, it's unfair to lump him in the same category as the Brad Johnson, Trent Dilfers of the world. And despite the fact that, yes, they've also won a Super Bowl, Joe Theismann is one of 13 quarterbacks in the history of the National Football League to lead a team to the Super Bowl and start in that Super Bowl in back-to-back years. It's a very short list of guys to do that. So,
way to go, Joe!
He also was a league MVP, which I don't think any of the other people that Peter King mentioned sniffed. So the resume for Joe Theismann on the football field, much greater than we gave him credit for. We owe a lot of credit and gratitude to George Templeton for setting the record straight for one Joe Theismann. He is the number one Theismann fan.
Yeah, and a lot of love to Pete King as well.
And Pete King, Peter, we owe you a gratitude because you got out one of the best rants we've had in the history of the Pro Football Network podcast.
Yeah, thanks, Pete.
And, of course, thank us. Big pat on the back to Wolchuk and Chiafalo here for providing George with, I'd say, 75% of his content for his show this week.
Yeah. Well, we did the heavy lifting for you this week.
You're welcome, George. We're here for you anytime you need us.
A little paid vacation there for you, George.
No big deal, George.
Put it on our tab, big boy.
Our check is coming in the mail, sir.
All right, very good. So what do we do now? I'm sort of just lost.
What do you mean?
Where do we go?
Well, you want to read the resume of Joe Theismann or no? Are we done with him?
I think I'm done with Theismann.
You didn't want to know that he was the NFL Man of the Year in 1982?
Damn, was he really the Walter Payton?
Yeah. He's also in the Washington Redskins Ring of Fame.
Did he ever win Comeback Player of the Year after his leg explosion?
Oh, shoot. No, he didn't. He did win NFL Offensive Player of the Year in 83.
Yeah, let's go ahead and be done with this Joe conversation.
Okay, all right. Sorry, Joe, but we gave you a lot of love there. So, George, please take that and be happy with it. How about we do a little bit of NFL house cleaning, my friend? What do you say?
Is it house cleaning or housekeeping?
It's whatever you want it to be.
I think it's just housekeeping.
All right, let's housekeep it up. All right, it's time for some NFL housekeeping. With Nosebleed Seats Podcast, Zach Wolchuk and Eric Chiafalo. Chi, I've got some hot news nuggets. You've got some hot news nuggets, and we're just a couple of hot news nuggetsy guys.
Yeah, we are. So should you go first?
I'm going to go first. No. I like to go first.
All right, I got it.
You come second, I come third.
Hey, if you say so, man, I'm ready to go. Here we are.
Perfect. I'm going to start off with one Doug Baldwin, who we talked about on Saturday. The Seattle Seahawks, little changing in the guard there. They cut Doug Baldwin. They also cut Cam Chancellor, a couple of Super Bowl champions. Well, Dougie Baldwin, the junior, went ahead and tweeted out his retirement, posted a lot of pictures of himself throughout the years.
Ooh, what kind of pics?
Him celebrating the Super Bowl win, him as a young youth player, him with Richard Sherman, I think, at the Pro Bowl.
Ah, Dick.
Him along the sidelines following a tough loss in the playoffs, on the bench. Just some, you know, pictures of himself throughout his career. And then he finished it off with, "And now my watch has ended." A little bit of a gif, jif, however you like to call it, from Jon Snow from Game of Thrones. I don't know if you watch Game of Thrones. By the way, this week's episode was absolute trash.
Never heard of it. Oh, really?
Oh, my gosh. It really angered me. It really upset me.
Man.
I was pissed. If anybody cares about my Game of Thrones opinion, this past week's episode was unsatisfying. You heard it here first. Come at me at ZACHWOLCHUK. We can Game of Thrones it out. What?
I'm not sure, but you got real excited there, and I just wanted to let you go.
Thank you. So Doug Baldwin retiring from the National Football League, it appears.
Yeah, that's sad news, but good for him. He got enough bag. He got that contract that he always needed.
Two-time Pro Bowler, won a Super Bowl.
Absolutely. Stud. He's a Stanford guy. He's a really, really smart guy. He's probably got a bright future ahead of him, whether it's anywhere in sports or anywhere out of. He's a bright dude, a good dude, and good for him.
How's his jawline?
His jawline's pretty sharp. Jawline's pretty sharp. Now, if he can keep it that way post-career as a receiver, that's pretty impressive. A lot of these guys, they start to swell up a little bit.
What do you think about Greg Jennings? I think he's done a good job maintaining.
Yeah, Greg's done a nice job, but Greg was never really a jawline guy. You know, he's got plenty of sodium sitting in those jowls, but that's just the way he was put together.
He spent the end of his career with the Dolphins, right?
Yeah, he had a cup of coffee with us, and it was a pretty unsatisfying cup of coffee,
interesting.
I might add. Yeah.
So it wasn't like a cold brew.
No. This was a scorching, scorching hot piss coffee. Not my favorite.
Bit
Starbucks.
Nutty.
Starbucks, man, it's bad. It's the Greg Jennings special.
Shoot.
So I got you a little something here, a little housekeeping.
Give me a little something.
Alan Bell, at Alan Bell 247 on the Twitter. He said last year the Browns were selected for Hard Knocks on May 17th. We should know who's going to be the 2019 Hard Knocks team by next week.
It's the Raiders, right? It's got to be the Raiders.
And we have a report that it is not going to be the San Francisco 49ers. So unfortunately, we're not going to get to see the red face of one Kyle Shanahan floating along our television for about 5 weeks leading up to the NFL season.
Well, I know a lot of people were hoping to see the beautiful buttocks of one Jimmy Garoppolo and the girlfriends that he brings to practice.
Yeah, that's going to be a sad miss. But if Oakland, John Gruden, and Antonio Brown and them boys decide to jump on the old Hard Knocks board, then I'm going to be excited about that. So I'm not really too worried about it. But I am a little disappointed we're not going to see the old red face of Shanahan.
Yeah, you and the red faces. For me, it's really not that big of a deal.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
I actually heard he and Jason Garrett, amongst others, even Mike Zimmer, have been putting in some words to the NFL offices of, they're a little bit offended, and I think they have every right to be, by George Templeton's Washington Redskins.
Why is that?
Well, because
what have the Redskins done?
It's the name, Redskins.
Well, I don't think they're the only ones offended, but we know Daniel Snyder, the jerk that he is, and that's something that I think Templeton and I can agree on. He doesn't care. He likes being racist.
No, but Jason Garrett and Kyle Shanahan and Mike Shanahan, even though he's not in the league anymore, and then certainly Mike Zimmer, all of them suffer from Redskin syndrome, and they think it's a little bit racist.
Does Joe Flacco have a little bit of that?
Red face?
Yeah.
I think he gets it on the nose. I don't think it's really gotten into the forehead or
cheeks
yet. He
Rudolphs himself a little?
Yeah, but I think in the coming years he might mature into one of those.
Well, he's going to be, you think, colder in Denver than Baltimore?
It's a little bit drier in Denver, so the lips are going to get chapped more, but I think Baltimore gets pretty stupid.
Well, I hope he has some lip gloss.
Well, I got actually a little Joe Flacco housekeeping for you.
I actually did, too. That's what I tried to segue there. It's my turn. It's not your turn.
I'm going to go ahead and do it.
You're going to speak out of turn.
He said, quote, "I hope he does develop." The he's talking about is one Drew Locke.
Dude, fuck you, man. That's exactly what I was just about to say.
But I don't look at that as my job. My job is to go win football games for this football team, end quote.
Well, I was trying to win football games for our football team, but you went ahead and just robbed me. You sacked your own quarterback.
Yeah, but I recovered the fumble that you had, and I scored a touchdown with it. So
I've never seen a lineman pick up the fumble and run it all the way in.
Well, now you have. Once in a lifetime, generational talent you're dealing with here. So what do you think about Joe Flacco saying that about old Drewski?
You know what? I think he's got a point. It's not his job. We saw this with Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, right? I mean, that was the whole deal then. We've seen this with several quarterbacks. I think Ben Roethlisberger's the same way. And there was a misconception here in Dallas with when Dak Prescott was a rookie and how Tony Romo supposedly helped him. I got news for you, people that believe that. That is a false narrative. It was actually Mark Sanchez, of all people, that really helped Dak Prescott out along
try that
the sideline.
Again?
Yeah.
What was his name?
Mark freaking Sanchez.
Hey. Nice job. No, you nailed it. Lil Mulligan never hurt nobody. Listen, it doesn't make Flacco any less of a bleep hole, right? He comes across as a total D-bag. I get it. But it's like, dude, if you had any confidence in yourself, first of all, you've already made a ton of money. You've robbed the Ravens for the last 4 years.
I don't
think
he's got confidence in himself, though. That's the thing. He just got his job robbed from him by a quarterback who can't really throw in Lamar Jackson. And then here he goes to Denver, and the first thing they do is they have Drew Lock slide to them in the second round, a guy who throughout the entire draft process they were rumored to love. Here he comes, looks good, young arm, fiery arm, sexy arm.
Swag.
He's going to take his job this year. It's going to happen.
He wears an arm sleeve, and he's got a visor. You know that quarterback's got swag. Let me ask you this.
Reminds me a little bit of Jay Cutler, and he had a great run in Denver.
Smoking Jay Cutler. RIP to you, bro. Hey, question. Would you rather lose your starting quarterback job to Lamar Jackson, the running back, or Josh Allen, the running back?
Ooh, I'd probably go with...
Like, what's going to make you feel like a person? They're both going to make you feel like a pretty person, let's be real. But which one's going to make you feel... This is one of the toughest would-you-rathers ever.
Yeah, this is a really hard one because in one hand, you've got a Heisman Trophy winner. On the other hand, you've got a top 10 pick.
Yeah.
So it's like, I lost my job to a guy who was drafted to be the franchise guy. I guess they both were. They were both first-round picks. One was 8. One was 32, I believe.
Yeah.
I think I'd say I'd feel worse about losing my job to Josh Allen.
Wow. I could see how that was tough for you.
Yeah.
You really went back and forth on that.
That was a tough one. I think that either answer would have sufficed.
Either way, you're feeling pretty shitty, though.
I'm not feeling good about myself, no, especially since I'm a former Super Bowl champion, Super Bowl MVP. But
you're not.
I'm feeling Joe better is, because of how darn wealthy I am, though. I mean, I cash checks, baby.
And that's what I'm saying. I'm like, bro, you literally have been robbing the Ravens for half a decade now, right? Can't you just feel good about it? They drafted him in the second round. He's not starting tomorrow. But let's not sit here and act like you have a long future ahead of you as a winning quarterback. All right, Joe.
So you don't think he's going to turn around the Broncos this year, lead them back to the playoffs?
Can't say I believe that. Well, Chuck, can't say I do.
Well, the Bronco fan base sure does. I've got another quarterback nugget for you.
Oh, my God.
This has to
put those nuggets in my face.
This has to do with a former first-round draft pick.
Really?
A 2013 first-round pick. You want to take a guess?
2013
first-rounder. It was a terrible draft class. Horrible
draft. Oh, this has to be Christian Ponder.
Not Christian Ponder, but same school.
Jake Locke.
No.
Gurr. Was it Jake Locker?
Locker might have been in that class. Maybe.
Man, he sucked.
Maybe.
Man, he sucked. Oh, Blaine Gabbert. I win.
No.
All right, just tell me, damn it.
EJ Manuel.
Say that name again.
EJ Manuel.
One more time, and I think it's going to ring a bell.
EJ Manuel.
Wow.
Former 16th overall pick in the 2013 NFL draft by the Buffalo Bills. He started 10 games his rookie season. Then he was benched in favor of Kyle Orton in 2014. Never regained the full-time starting job in his final two seasons in Buffalo. Played for the Raiders in 2017. They cut him in September. Then he went ahead and joined the Chiefs in February. He was a backup quarterback there this past season.
And he's the reason why he really taught Mahomes. He really groomed Mahomes
maybe
the quarterback that he is.
He might have.
And then said, all right, my job's done here.
And now he's retiring from the National Football League after 5 seasons.
You know what's funny? Last week we talked about Derek Anderson and how he retired and how I had no idea he was even still playing football.
It's not funny.
This is in that same family of I had no idea that not only was – EJ Manuel still even alive, but that he was in the National Football League.
You know what? We do a football podcast every week.
So they say.
I'd encourage you to figure out who the hell's on what team.
So you knew EJ Manuel was still playing football and getting paid by an NFL team.
Is that even a question? Of course I did.
All right. Very good. I'm proud of you. I appreciate you. Thanks for picking up your friend while he's struggling. Thanks for stomping on my head while I'm drowning.
That's what I'm here for, you.
I have a housekeeping note here.
A little mouth-to-mouth?
From James Palmer. Oh, we got some mouth-to-mouth. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Actually, I think they didn't get into the whole mouth-to-mouth thing here, but I would have. That would have been my follow-up. Von Miller got to hang with the Patriots crew at the horse races, the horse derby.
Von Miller hanging with the New England Patriots crew?
Yeah, at the derby.
Sounds a little weird.
And he said, quote, "It's extremely hard not to like Tom Brady and all of those guys." Von then jokingly added, "I'm a Tom Brady fan, unless it's on Sundays." So I guess the derby wasn't on a Sunday. So Von was allowed himself to hang and be around Tom Brady. I'm sure there's an aura about him that... Now, I do wonder if Von would co-sign the father-son makeouts. I'm not sure that he would, but... James Palmer didn't.
If you want
there.
To go back and just to clarify for listeners that don't know what you're referencing there.
Who doesn't know? We've seen it like after every Super Bowl. And then obviously Tom versus Time.
Yeah, Tom versus Time documentary.
The time that he was versing was how long can I kiss my son on the mouth with all these cameras.
It was a very awkward mouth kiss.
And he actually broke the record. So Tom won, Time zero.
Okay. If I'm a Denver Bronco fan, let's put it this way. I guess I can't because there's no team that's been comparable to the Patriots in terms of dominance. But either way, if you're a Broncos fan that probably dislike the Patriots like every AFC team, like every team in the league does, I'm not overly thrilled with Von Miller hanging out with these guys. I don't care if it's a Saturday or a freaking Wednesday, hump day in the middle of the week. Von, why don't you hang out with your own teammates? What do you need to be schmoozing with Brady for? He's got enough friends. Go play with your chickens, Vaughn.
Yeah, Vaughn's an interesting cat. He really is.
What was he wearing? You know he's got an excellent sense of fashion.
Yeah, well, he's a cowboy hat guy. The derby hats are usually bigger. You know, they're that big sort of floppy spring-looking hat.
Ooh, I love a floppy spring look.
Yeah, he's probably going with the cowboy hat look, though that's my guess. Maybe a cut-off little vest open.
Showing the neeps.
Yeah, no shirt for sure.
Mm.
All right, I got another one for you if you're ready.
Give it to me.
A little more New England action. According to Adam Schefter,
you have loved the Patriots for life.
A Florida judge ruled today, and journalistically, I know you and I are both a little bit bummed about this. The video of Patriots owner Robert Kraft from inside a spa, a.k.a. the Wild Orchid.
Horny.
Cannot be used because it was obtained illegally.
Oh, come on!
A win for Kraft.
Man, yeah. So we're not going to get to see the video?
Nope. And I know, obviously, both of us didn't necessarily want to see it, but for journalistic reasons, the professionals that we are, we felt like it was our duty to see it.
Oh, no, it's important to watch it and report on it.
For the fans. I mean, we're here for the people, and that's what we're here to do.
Definitely no personal curiosity whatsoever.
No, just, there was not a pleasure just vibe to be coming from either one of us.
No, not at all. Just to hard facts.
Yeah, super hard, from what I hear.
Shriveled.
Lucky for Kraft. Now, assuming this case hits a legal dead end, he's going to be safe, but he could still face discipline from the NFL under the personal conduct
policy. It's amazing
policy.
What money can buy, Robert.
Yeah, well, it can buy a $75 handy at the Wild Orchid.
I wouldn't have it any other way.
No, I wouldn't either. So, unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, we will not be able to report on that and give you the play-by-play. Obviously, if there ends up being a leak, Walchuk and I will be first on it. Our investigative journalism skills are through the roof.
We'll plug that leak.
Yeah, so we'll get there and we'll get it to you, but we're gonna have to do some serious digging.
All right, you have anything else? What?
I think I got. Let's see, what do I got? I think I got one more for you. I just wanted to let everybody know that there was a Kansas City Chief that got married. I think over the weekend.
Really?
And
who was it? Was it Patrick?
No, it was not. Not Pat Mahomes.
Ooh, let me guess. Was it a...
No, I don't think you're going to know.
I won't know who this is.
His name's Garrett Dieter.
Dude, who the heck wouldn't know who Garrett Dieter is?
Yeah, go ahead. Talk to me about Garrett
Dieter. Great lineman.
Great lineman? All right, nice. Thank you. I appreciate that. I think he's a long snapper. Either way, the point I'm making is at the wedding, there's a great little video clip.
The nut lineman?
While they're having their first dance, you have Pat Mahomes and Travis Kelce sipping on what looks to be a Bud Light.
Oh, okay.
Each one of them in the left hand, swaying back and forth.
Was it a Bud Light Lime?
Absolutely loving life. It doesn't look to be a lime. I haven't confirmed it with
Are you into Bud Light? Or is that against man code? Does it have to be just pure Bud Light, or can you go Bud Light Lime?
Oh, are you kidding me? I have no reservations about anything I'm drinking. I prefer the umbrella. I prefer the flavors. I don't know what you did on Cinco de Mayo, but I was swimming in a pool of White Claw. If you don't know what White Claw is, it is like a sparkling water drink, but there's alcohol in it, and there's different flavors, and you can chug it like it's actually water, and you can get blackout in about 5 minutes. I learned that on Cinco de Mayo. I'm actually still recovering from that. It was one of the best days of my life.
I was working.
So to answer your question, lime all day long. But Pat Mahomes, Travis Kelce looking like besties, swaying back and forth, dancing, sipping on some Bud Light, enjoying the offseason as an MVP might and the top tight end in the league might. So just supporting their friend at the wedding, and that's a little housekeeping, NFL style.
I got one thing just to wrap it up, and this is actually a little bit of a serious note.
What do you mean?
Yeah, it's serious. That's what I mean.
Wait, you haven't been serious this whole time?
No, not at all.
Well, that's disappointing. I thought your NFL knowledge was for real.
Don't ever doubt that. Don't ever doubt that.
All right, so what should I do here? Should I change the vibe?
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm suggesting.
All right, well, 1 second. Let me see what Celine's up to here.
We lost a great one in the NFL family. Former Chiefs coach Gunther Cunningham passing away at the age of 72.
I thought you were going to say Gil. Jesus, you freaked me out.
No, not Gil. Gil Brand is still alive and well.
That set up everything to do with Gil.
Now, fuck off, Gil Brand.
And wow.
Gunther Cunningham began his coaching career in 1969. An Oregon assistant. His first break into the NFL came in 1982 with the then Baltimore Colts as an assistant. He spent time with the San Diego Chargers in L.A.
Lucky bastard.
With the Raiders before moving to Kansas City as the defensive coordinator from 95 to 98. In 99, he took over from Marty Schottenheimer as the Chiefs head coach.
Little Marty Ball.
For 2 years.
Go win a bunch of regular season games.
Compiling a .500 record going 16-16. For more than 30 years, Cunningham was a staple personality among the NFL coaching world. His ambulance for the sport will be missed.
Do you even know what that word
with
means?
With his passing. No, I don't
know. Did you write that yourself?
No, I am actually reading that.
Damn right you are.
I don't know what that means.
Is that Pete King?
No.
Monday morning quarterback?
No, it wasn't.
All right.
No, it wasn't.
Do you want to give any credit or?
This is from NFL.com. They wrote a nice little passage for him.
Gotcha. NFL.com. He is a great writer.
Yeah. I'm not going to throw that person under the bus.
All right, so is that your eulogy? Are we done?
Yeah.
That's all you got for Gunther?
Shout out.
I thought you had like a whole thing.
Shout out to Gunther. He most recently was a senior coaching assistant with the Detroit Lions from 2014 to 2017. And
why did they have to call him senior?
Also their defensive coordinator from 2009 to 2013. It's just kind of what they do, man.
Is that a respectful thing?
I don't know. I mean, Monty Kiffin was also like a senior consultant.
Has Rod Marinelli for the Cowboys gotten the senior?
No.
Staple?
Not yet. But
not
it's,
yet?
It's probably coming.
It's on its way?
Yeah.
It's got to be. All right, Gunther Cunningham, we love you, pal. Rest in paradise. Well, now that you've totally killed the vibe of the show.
Yeah, I really just hate the way you belittle people.
I'm not really
you just,
sure.
Like, don't show any kind of gratitude. I'm trying to have a serious moment. You've just got to be.
Wait, what are you talking about?
You've just
got
to be cracking jokes left and right. I think it's completely disrespectful.
What joke?
I think it's just disgusting.
Cracked.
I think it's disgusting.
You absolute, complete, and utter jackass.
Listen,
we're trying to have a moment for a longtime coach here in the National Football League that passed away.
Yeah, and you
think
read
of his, think of his family.
You read a fake ass eulogy.
It wasn't fake.
Yes, it was.
No, it wasn't.
You said a word that you don't even know.
It was one word.
Ambulance?
The importance of that was just to talk about how long this man had been involved with the game that we know and love. We wanted to give him a moment of appreciation.
And that's exactly what we did.
And
we
you've
got
to just
lean in for a live
scoff
cover.
All over it.
I mean, Jesus.
Just
dude, what
make
else
a
was
freaking bit about it like you always have to do.
I made the arrangement.
God, you made the arrangement.
I got Celine in here.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, you played a song clip. Congratulations. fucking lations.
Oh, you know Gunther loved Celine.
Jeez.
You jerk.
He would have. This was his last. Oh, thing
like you know
wanted.
What Gunther loved. You didn't even know who he was.
What's his name again?
Gunther Cunningham.
That's exactly what I said.
You said
he loves Celine.
He probably did.
He appreciated that, and now you look what you're doing. You're stepping all over it. You're making a thing. You're making a scene.
I'm making a scene. Whatever, dude.
Making us look like bleep holes, man.
I think you've already accomplished that.
All right, where do we even go from here? I mean, all you've done is completely poop on the show.
I've pooped on the show.
You've literally pulled your pants down in the middle of the damn...
One moment of credibility, and you've got to legitimately make it a f***ing mockery. I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed to be in the same room with you right now.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
I am.
Good.
I want to crawl in a hole and cry.
Well, is it okay to continue, or is that how you wanted to end the show?
No, let's continue, please.
All right, well, I guess I'm going to set it up because Lord knows you're just going to crap some more on the show if
Well,
you
it's
do.
About time you did something because I've been carrying you on my shoulders for the last 3 years.
It's time for a little Cowboys conversation.
Excellent!
You said it wrong.
All right, well, why don't you do it then?
Cowboys conversation.
Excellent!
You really nailed that one, bro. Nice job. That was probably your best one ever.
Thank you. I got into that.
All right, so here's the deal.
No, I really do need you to kind of lead us through what you want to talk about here, because I haven't read this article on purpose, just because I wanted to be surprised.
Okay, great. So you came unprepared. Awesome. No, I'm glad you're forthright, you're honest, you're self-aware.
You told me to stay away and not read this article.
Well, the only reason why I said that is because I knew you don't pay the subscription to The Athletic.
Because you refuse to give me your login information. Isn't that what friends are for?
That's where this article comes from about your Dallas Football Cowboys. It is from the great Bob Sturm.
Bort Sturm.
Yeah, and the title of this article is Here's What Really Held the 2018 Cowboys Back and What Kellen Moore's 2019 Offense Must Solve, damn it.
All right, so we've got questions and answers, baby. Let's do it Q&A style.
All right, so as we know, the Cowboys made the midseason trade for Amari Cooper, and a lot of good things happened after that.
Great things happened after that.
Fantastic things.
Phenomenal.
You were a much happier person. I can personally account for
that. I could actually wake up on Monday mornings feeling like a human being.
So I'm going to give you some Cowboys NFL rankings from before they got Cooper and after they got Cooper.
I'm sure they're drastic.
You're going to see a lot of nice changes.
Are these specifically Dak Prescott's or just the offense?
This is the offense.
Okay,
this is the offense. And there's going to be one in particular that's going to stick out to you that might you be like, And so when you do that, just let me know. The first one is giveaways per game. The Cowboys were ranked 10th in the league before they had Cooper, and they were ranked 5th in the league once they got Cooper.
Okay.
So they improved a lot just on turnovers. Before they had Cooper, their average points per game were 26th in the league, which is putrid, and they jumped up to 19th in the league once they added Cooper for the second half of the season.
Okay.
Points per drive, they were ranked 22nd before Cooper, 13th once they got Cooper.
Wow.
Third down percentage. Look at this one, man. You're going to love this. They were ranked 29th in the league before they got Cooper on third downs. That is piss bleeping poor. Then they were first in the NFL.
Wow.
With Cooper.
Not surprising, because during the season on our podcast, that was the first thing of relevance that I know I really noted. I think you did too. You could see it immediately in his first game, well, second game back against the Eagles on Sunday Night Football. His, to me, welcome to the Dallas Cowboys moment was on a third down, basically throwing off an Eagles wimpy tackler and breaking free for a 5-yard yak to get a first down on a third down play to move the chains. Amari was huge at that.
So their pass yards per game went from 29th to 11th once they added Cooper. Their total yards per game went from 28th to 12th.
Woo!
Their explosive plays went from 29th to 25th, so not a huge jump. Their sacks per game stayed the same, 27-27. Now check out this one.
red zone touchdown percentage.
Oh, is this the one that's going to make me go,
yeah, I think so. They were ranked 16th in the NFL, right there in the middle, right there, dead smack, 16 out of 32 in the red zone. Then they added Cooper, and all of a sudden, they're 30th in the league in red zone percentage.
Ooh.
Their red zone trips per game went up a little bit more. They went from 22, or they went from 27th in the league in red zone trips per game. They were under 3 a game before Cooper. Once they got Cooper, they were almost 4 per game, and that ranked them 7th in the league. So they got to the red zone more once they had Cooper, but their red zone efficiency once they got there with Cooper on the team went from about average to really, really shitty. And those are those are just the numbers right there. So basically,
red zone efficiency continued to be a problem.
So not only did it continue to be a problem, it became more of a problem once they added Cooper.
Which is crazy because you've got a quarterback who is mobile and can run in the red zone, plus Ezekiel Elliott, who's one of the best running backs in football, if not the best, an offensive line that's considered to be one of the best in the game. And then you add Amari Cooper, who really every statistical category aside from that boosted your offense.
Absolutely.
So it is very bewildering.
Yeah, I mean, literally almost nobody was more inefficient at scoring touchdowns in the red zone than the Dallas Cowboys in the year 2018. So that is problematic. Only the Jets, Jaguars, and 49ers. You guys are living in a Blake Bortles,
yeah, that is not
and
a
fat-faced Darnold and red-faced Kyle Shanahan world.
Not a lumping of teams that I want to be a part of.
Not some guys you want to be a part of.
Well, now, maybe the 49ers eventually, but not last year.
Now, let me tell you this. This is a little branch off of your red zone woes.
Yeah.
Here's another one you're not going to like.
Okay, it's another bad branch.
No team was more inefficient at scoring touchdowns after a first and goal than the Dallas Cowboys.
Goodness,
so once you
man.
Guys got the ball inside the 10-yard line, it's first and goal, baby. Let's go score. We got Zeke Elliott. We got supposedly the best offensive line in the league. We got a quarterback who's mobile as bleep and can go run for a touchdown anytime he wants. And, oh, by the way, we got Amari Bleep and Cooper, ladies and gentlemen. You guys are last in the league in those scenarios. That makes no sense. That's sad. It's bewildering, and I'm frustrated for you.
Got two words for you, sir.
Give it to me.
Scott Linehan.
Gotcha. Okay, so that's what you base it all on.
I think that there is a little bit of offensive execution mixed in there, but the play calling was atrocious, specifically in the red zone.
All right, so let me give you this. The Cowboys scored touchdowns on those first and goal situations 52% of the time. The Saints, who were number one in the league at scoring on first and goal situations, were 85% touchdown rate. So that's just the difference between the best and the worst right there. I mean, even Minnesota, 19th in the league, and their rate was 75% in those situations. So the drop-off is dramatic. The 19th team in the league was still scoring at a 75% pop. You guys are 52%. The league average in first and goal situations, 76%. You guys at 52 are well under that. So, I mean, the amount of points you guys left on the board right there is...
Yeah, it's crazy to think that they were able to win 10 football games and win a division title in the regular season.
Well, credit
that. I mean,
that
because the room for error...
Defense.
Yeah, no doubt. The room for error in the NFL is so minuscule. If you're settling for field goals, the amount of times the Cowboys should have been getting touchdowns, they should have lost a lot of games.
So, Sturm then goes into a couple of reasons as to why. So, you give the Scott Linehan reason. Basically, play calling sucked. It's not the players' fault. It's more coaching than players, correct? That's sort of where your head went initially?
I think more so than players, yes.
All right, so his first thing is, number one, Dak Prescott is not quite the same passer inside the red zone as he is outside of it.
Okay.
Which can make sense. The field shrinks. He's not an accurate passer in the first place.
Yeah.
Once you get into the red zone, your windows get tighter. He's not a very aggressive quarterback. He's not one to try to fit the ball into tight windows. He's more, I want to see it open. I'll get it to you when you
are. He's not a guy that really leads receivers open, which would be the next step in his progression as a passer.
And in the red zone, those are the kinds of throws you got to make. You got to thread the bleeping needle. Prescott's not really one to do that. So Sturm, he notes that, you know, man, in
that's
the red
zone.
That's
an area Dak needs to improve.
Yeah, Dak is generally relatively not great accuracy-wise, and then that just gets highlighted even more. It gets amplified
in the red zone. Yeah, when the field's tighter, more
no
congestion.
Question. So he gives you his passer
makes
rating.
Makes sense.
He gives you his passer rating outside the red zone and inside the red zone, which in 2018, outside the red zone, his passer rating was 95, almost 96. Inside the red zone, it was under 85. It was 84.5. The NFL average last year was in the red zone 95.5.
Ouch.
So he was over 10 points off, 10 points below the NFL average for passer rating inside the red zone. That's Dak Prescott right there for you. Potentially your $30 million per year quarterback. Now, listen, that's just, I'm just giving you the numbers here. That is what it is. Now, coming to the next reason why he says they struggled, he says in 2018, the offense had none of the same red zone threats that they featured in 2016, 2017.
Right, no Dez Bryant, no Jason Witten.
That's Jason Witten, amen. And now listen to this number right here. You're going to love this. Okay, so between 2016 and 2017, Dez Bryant and Jason Witten combined for 54 touchdowns in the red zone.
Mm-hmm.
And that was more than any than all of the other Cowboys skill players combined.
Yes.
So those two guys, losing them was pretty huge.
It was mega, and it was the conversation of the entire offseason last year. How are you going to replace that red zone production?
And then the third reason is the quality of the Cowboys' offensive line took a massive step backward in 2018.
So the losses eventually of Ronald Leary and Doug Free caught up with them.
Correct.
And no Travis Frederick.
Yes, and the rushing average inside the five-yard line for Zeke and for Dak, if you look at it, like in 2016, inside the five-yard line, Ezekiel Elliott was higher than the NFL average for yards per carry, and so was Dak. But in 2018, Zeke was well below the NFL average, and so was Dak in terms of yards per carry inside the five-yard line. So what is supposed to be a huge strength has become, in moments, really a weakness, which in terms of the offensive line. And it's crazy to think that with the narrative of y'all's offensive line being so good and then obviously having what is seen to be as a top two or three running back in the NFL, if not the best, in Zeke Elliott. And then you also have the mobile quarterback in Dak, and you guys still can't figure out.
Well, that was always the frustration. I just felt like they never utilized Dak's skill set in the red zone.
And that is number four. He says, by all accounts, Scott Linehan was unable to help this group with the schematic advantages in the red zone. He said they didn't run Dak enough. Dak is literally the best red zone rushing quarterback when it comes to attempts, yards, and touchdowns. The dude is an absolute monster. And he basically, they took that away from him. And that's a huge, huge asset when you have a guy like Dak.
Absolutely.
He's the man in those situations, and they did not run him enough. And then the other thing is they didn't run enough of the mesh routes, the rub routes. You and I both know we love a good rub route. In the red zone especially, making those pick plays.
I love that tight end cross.
Yeah, and they did not do that nearly enough, according to... Well,
they also didn't have a very good... Witten should help with that. I'm sure Gallup in his second year will help with that. A whole offseason with Amari Cooper. But hopefully Kellen Moore will be the guy to solve a lot of those problems.
So he says, in order to remedy this whole situation, the Cowboys absolutely must utilize Dak Prescott on his feet more. In conjunction with Zeke, they got to do it. He's too gifted to ignore. And if Carolina makes Cam Newton the leading rushing threat deep in enemy territory, the Cowboys should as well.
100% agree. Let's get some option going.
And then he talks about the mesh routes, the rub routes, the crossing routes. Too much of the Cowboys' passing game has been used in isolation, and it's too easy to defend. This should change immediately, especially with Randall Cobb and Tony Pollard now in the mix. And then he says the offense must work quickly to, you know, stay on schedule, whatever, whatever, so that
There would be a lot of times, no doubt, that it would be a holding penalty, a false start, a sack from Dak. All of a sudden, you're first and goal at the 3, and then you're second and goal from the 12. And that really sets you behind the chains.
Yes. And then he just says, you know, in general, the offensive line needs to get better, and schematically, you can help them by, instead of bringing in another tight end or, you know, 2-3 tight end stack in the box and telegraphing your runs, spread things out, go more 11, even 10 personnel, spread things out. And that'll make things a little bit easier because teams can't stack the box and your O-line just gets, you know, just outmatched in those situations. So those are some of the things that Sturm suggests, and I think those are all great suggestions in general. I just thought it was great to highlight that we talk about the Cowboys in general. We know they didn't score enough. I mean, they were their 22nd ranked scoring offense in the NFL. That is not good enough. Scoring like 20 to 22 points a game in 2019 is not a recipe for success. If your defense wasn't so dominant last year, there's no way you guys win, you know, anywhere near the amount of games you guys won. But to narrow it down even more so to the red zone and seeing, wow, not only was there schematic disadvantages, but your quarterback's not necessarily as good in the red zone, your offensive line's not as good in the red zone. I mean, those are big things.
Basically everything declined.
To address, identify. Yeah, and it's crazy because Amari Cooper boosts every offensive category for you guys pretty much except for even the red zone trips. You guys were getting to the red zone even more, but you guys couldn't capitalize. You're leaving so many points on the board, and it's amazing you guys won the amount of games you did, and it is hats off to the defense for that. But that means, you know, big responsibility, big obstacles ahead for one Kellen Moore, and a job that he's going to have to come in there, and he's going to have to fix a couple of things.
But we've got some audio on Kellen Moore talking about what he wants to do to fix that offense here in 2019.
Probably, you know, multiple. I think the beauty of what our, you know, roster currently is we got a lot of versatility. We got guys who can kind of line up in a lot of different places. You know, all of our running backs, from Mays being the fullback, what he did in Oakland where he kind of moved around a lot, our running back Zeke's got tremendous hands, you know, and he can do a lot of things, and we drafted Tony for a reason, and you know, Mike can catch it as well, and he can line up in spots, and all of our receivers are versatile guys. You go back to when Randall was in Green Bay, he lined up in a lot of spots, and so, you know, we like the versatility of our group, that hopefully we can be multiple and present things and different ways, and at the end of the day, you know, still have our foundation, our philosophy, and you know, you can run similar plays, just have a lot of different looks.
Let's go, baby. Music to my ears, Kellen. Make it all happen.
Multiple versatility. They can do it all.
I'm a chameleon, baby. I want all the motions. I want all the window dressing. I want it, everything. Give it to me.
Yeah, the word that he kept using over and over again throughout his little media scrum was multiple. He wants to be multiple. He feels like they know Zeke can be that. They think Randall Cobb can. They know Amari Cooper can. And they drafted Tony Pollard specifically for that reason. And we know that during the draft process, and particularly on draft day when they drafted Tony Pollard, a lot of that had to do with Kellen Moore being a massive, massive advocate for, hey, we need this guy. Obviously, you'd like to think Kellen has a very poignant and direct plan for him and how to use him, when to use him, where to use him. And hopefully it's all over the place, and hopefully it's with Zeke. I don't think he's coming in to be the backup to Zeke. I think he's going to be the kind of guy that plays on the field with Zeke, in the backfield, out in the slot, moving around, in motion.
Just Swiss Army knife kind of guy.
Absolutely. A speedster that is always a threat to take it to the house. And if he can show any signs of that early on in the season, that will just do tremendous things of just generally opening up and making things easier for the offense, because the defense knows, man, if there's a guy on that offense that can just totally outrun all of us, we have to key on him, and we have to respect that speed, and that then opens things up for everybody else in a beautiful way.
Well, and just to take attention off of Ezekiel Elliott, that's the one thing. The first 8 games of last year, until they made that trade for Amari Cooper, there was nobody on that offense that put fear into opposing defensive coordinators and defenses other than 21. You add 19 into the picture, all right, we got to worry about a receiver. But all of a sudden now, if you're using your guys to their skill set, like Randall Cobb, like Tony Pollard, all of a sudden Tavon Austin maybe gets a little wrinkle here and there, and it's, oh, crap, we don't know where the ball is going to go every single play. We can't just focus on stopping Ezekiel Elliott and then double-teaming and taking away Amari Cooper. We've got to worry about Gallup, Pollard, everybody that we just mentioned. Yes, of course, it's making yourselves more multiple, which is what Kellen Moore is wanting. And man, Cowboy fans, that is music to our ears, baby.
And that's the kind of stuff you need in the red zone as well. I mean, easy touchdowns. The Rams had so many easy touchdowns. There were so many little dump-offs to Gurley.
Well, they did a great job spreading it open. They're running it out of shotgun a lot of the time. They're putting all three of their badass receivers out there, plus one of their big tight ends. Everett? Jared Everett?
Or Higbee or something.
They've got Tyler Higbee as well. Yeah, no doubt. So they've got guys that can spread it out there, And they're getting easy touchdowns, whether it was for Popeye's Chicken, C.J. Anderson, or Todd Gurley. They're making it very simplistic and high percentage plays.
Yeah, and that's what you're hoping Kellen Moore brings to this offense. I think he is the kind of guy that is young enough to understand where the league is. I mean, you don't have to turn on tape of the Rams or the Saints or the Chiefs for more than 4 seconds to know, holy crap, these guys are playing a completely different sport than us, and we need to get with the times. Otherwise, we're going to keep dropping in the offensive scoring rankings every single year, and we're going to be fighting to get to 20. And we're going to make our defense have to bend over backwards just to be able to keep us in games. I think Kellen Moore's smart enough to understand that. I don't know if Garrett is not stubborn enough, you know, to allow Moore to take the reins on that.
Well, it'll either be one of two things. One, he wants plausible deniability. If things go bad, hey, I let Kellen do this. I'll let him take the reins. You guys wanted to change, I let Kellen Moore do his thing. It's not my fault.
God, I can't wait for that.
Or two, he's worried about his job, things aren't going well, and he decides, all right, I got to come in and micromanage. I'm taking over the reins again of this playbook, and you go back to 2007 Dallas Cowboy offense. It's probably not going to work 12 years later.
It's 2007 Cowboys offense, but it's the 1997 playbook.
Yeah, that's fair.
So Kellen Moore, a lot of pressure on you, bro. Red zone woes galore. You're coming back with a very relatively similar roster.
Good thing is, with how bad those numbers were, there's nowhere to go but up.
Well, in terms of the first and goal scoring, yeah, you guys were dead last. There's literally, you can either stay the worst or maybe you can get a little bit better. Hopefully you can. In terms of the overall red zone scoring, yeah, you got about 4 or 5 teams that were below you guys. Otherwise, yeah, there's really nowhere to go but up. And that's a really glass half full positive way, silver lining way to look at it. So good
you know
you,
me.
Walshuck.
That's what I'm going for.
Yeah, you're Mr. Positivity.
Speaking of offenses, let's move away from Cowboys conversation, but keep the offense going. And I've got a list of the top 10 offenses according to one, Chris Wessling of NFL.com. Now, this is an article that I know you've seen as well, and you thought was rather interesting. Now, it breaks it down into grading the offensive skill position. So you've got the quarterback grades, backfield grades, the receiving core, and the offensive line. We'll quickly just highlight, you want to start with the top 5, or do you want to start from the bottom and work our way up?
So it's the top 10?
It's the top 10 overall.
Projected for next year.
Projected for next year, yes.
Just offenses.
Just offenses.
Who's going to be the best offense?
It's not teams, it's just the offense.
Oh, this is going to be fun. All right, I want to guess. I want to play.
All right, let's go.
All right, very good, very good. Number one has to be the Chiefs of Kansas City. Read them and weep, baby.
It is not the Chiefs of Kansas City. In fact, the Chiefs are not even in the top 3, my friend.
So they're 4th?
They're not 4 either.
Wow, okay. Curveball. So they're not in the top 4. They're number 5.
They're not in the top 5.
What? They're number 6?
They are number 6.
God, why did you say they're not even in the top 3?
Because I didn't want to just give it away to you that easily.
Jesus. All right. Well, all right. So I got that one. Wow, I nailed it.
You know number 6. Chiefs, that is number Kansas 6. City.
All right, nice. All right, cool. I'm going to try not to use any lifelines. I don't want any help from you. So far, I've been nailing it. Number 1. So if the Chiefs aren't number 1, maybe it's the Rams.
It is
Los Angeles.
Not the Rams.
All right, very good. I know what I'm talking about here. Are they number 2? Rams are number 2?
The Rams are not number 2.
What the hell?
Yeah.
How could Sean McVay, Pat Mahomes, Andy Reid, and Jared Goff not be in the top 3? That's unbelievable. This list sucks.
Well,
is this
Wessling? The Chiefs are a little bit understandable given the losses.
Yeah, well, I guess if you're... I guess Tyreek Hill's more than likely out. Kareem Hunt, I mean, Kareem Hunt's not a loss. They already showed with Damian Williams he can still be a badass running back.
Yeah, now, for whatever reason, Wessling is only grading the Chiefs' backfield as a C+. That's one of the lower ratings here in the top.
Dude, Damian Williams was a fantasy beast, Wessling.
He certainly was a fantasy beast. And they don't only have Damian Williams. They also added Carlos Hyde, who's been productive in the league.
Eh.
Along with Darwin Thompson and James Williams. So who really cares about those other two? But you got the tandem of Damian Williams and Carlos Hyde. Now, I am a Damian Williams fan. You know about him a little bit more than most because you did watch him with the Miami Dolphins for a few years. The question is, can he be an every-down back for a 16-game season? Because he has shown that he's a little bit injury prone.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the only thing. If he gets injured now, if he does, they're in trouble because Carlos Hyde is worthless, and I don't know about those other two guys, so we'll have to see about them. But their offense, the way their offense works, it makes it pretty easy for the running back. You know, you're gonna catch the ball in space. Just go get some yards after the catch here. No one's paying attention to you. We're all trying to stop Kelce and Mahomes in general. So the running back is not somebody you're really keying on. But Damian Williams is an underrated back, really good out of the backfield. He's quick, and he can run between the tackles. I mean, he can really do everything you want. It's just a matter of, like you said, can he stay healthy? But he did a great job for them last year. I'm not worried about him, but he's got him listed at sixth. I mean, I don't know. I think that's a little low.
Well, the thing is, you've got obviously an A-plus rating at quarterback with Pat Mahomes. It drops to a B for the receiving core and a B for the offensive line. The line is what it is. But the receiving core without Tyreek Hill certainly doesn't look that great.
Is he not considering coaching? Is coaching just doesn't matter?
He's not considering coaching.
All right, thanks, Wesley. Then that means the Cowboys might be number one. Are the Cowboys offensive?
The Cowboys aren't in the top 10.
All right,
Cowboys aren't
in this list. All right, maybe he knows what he's talking about then.
Yeah, the Cowboys aren't on the list. But
all right, so where are the Rams?
The Rams are five.
I knew it.
So the Rams are in the top five.
All right, good.
He's grading Goff out as a B.
Yep.
A B plus for the backfield with Gurley and Malcolm Brown.
Ooh, those knees.
And then the receiving core, this is where I think that he's got it wrong. The receiving core is only a B plus.
What do you think? It should be an A?
I think it should be an A. Is there a better top three than Robert Woods, Brandon Cooks, and Cooper Kupp in the league?
You know I love me some Bob Woods.
And I know Cooper Kupp's coming back from injury, but still, when those three are on the field, and Josh Reynolds proved to be a capable third option if need be, so your top four of Robert Woods, Brandon Cooks, Cooper Kupp, and Josh Reynolds, and in terms of depth, I mean, I understand you got Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham Jr. together there in Cleveland. I guess the third is that Florida receiver, Callaway.
Yeah, they had Callaway, and they also had Higgins. Higgins is a player,
yeah,
too.
But I still don't think that three is better than what the Rams three have.
Well, Odell Beckham Jr. is the best of all of them, and then Jarvis Landry is a great compliment to him. I don't know. You're splitting hairs. Where are the Browns? Browns got to be top five, huh? On paper?
The Browns on here?
Yeah, Browns got to be on.
They're not in the top five.
Okay, the top 10?
They're in the top 10.
And top 8.
Ooh, what do you think?
Yeah, they're definitely top 8.
They're 7.
They're 7. All right, very good. So we got 5, 6, 7. I've nailed them on my first try each time.
Look, their receiving core got an A minus.
All right, listen, I'm on a roll here. The Saints are somewhere involved. I'll say the Saints are top 5.
The Saints are number 1.
Okay, they're okay. Nice.
So the Saints are number 1.
That's what I thought.
He's got the backfield an A minus with Alvin Kamara. They have Latavius Murray, who essentially fills in for Mark Ingram. A B-plus in the receiving core with Michael Thomas leading the way. After that, it's really just a bunch of guys.
Dude, I got to tell you, number one, Wesley, I think, swing and a miss there, pal. Number one for a Drew Brees-led team who Drew Brees started really falling off towards the end of last year. He was great early on. He's getting old. That arm was not the same, and they got lucky against the Eagles in that playoff game anyways. And then, obviously, they got robbed against the Rams, but that's neither here nor there. He was not the same quarterback in the second half of the season. That offense was not the same. They were putting up freaking crazy Madden numbers early on in the season, and then towards the end of the season, they were struggling to get to freaking 20. So I don't know what Wessling's talking about unless we're only talking about the first 4 weeks of the season.
Yeah,
then maybe we're talking about
know.
The Saints having the number one offense.
I don't know either. And their receiving core outside of Michael Thomas, there's a big dip.
It's I mean, literally, let's play a game called Eric. Can you guess another receiver for the Saints other than Michael Thomas?
I said one.
Marquise Colston.
No.
Lance Moore.
No, not anymore.
Joe Horn.
Ooh, that was a long time ago, but that cell phone was great.
Dante Stallworth.
Ooh, no.
Gotcha.
He might be in prison.
Okay, very good. Not gonna go there. Okay, then that's it. Wow.
No, Traquan
Brandon
Smith.
Cooks.
Traquan Smith for you.
Ah, damn it.
What about Keith Kirkwood?
Kirkwood, yes. I had that one.
Cameron Meredith, Bear.
The former Bear.
And then Austin Carr.
Austin Carr. I think it's pronounced Curar.
Yeah, and they added Jared Cook at tight end. So he's got them at number one. Number two is the Indianapolis Colts.
Indy. Oh, Andrew Luck.
They did finally get Andrew Luck some good pieces.
And who is that? Who are those receivers?
Okay, so you want to let's go. Let's talk about it. We know T.Y.
Sure.
They added Devin Funchess, who I like as a number two to T.Y. I think that's a good compliment.
You got
the big body
compliment
of Funchess.
Yeah.
And the speedster that is T.Y. Hilton. They've got Eric Ebron, who dominated at tight end last year, along with Jack Doyle.
And, you know, let's not forget, Funchess hasn't played with an accurate quarterback his entire career. Now he gets to go play with Andrew Luck. That is a step up, my friend.
Big time. And then, of course, they drafted Paris Campbell from Ohio State, the speed demon slot receiver.
That's right.
So I think that top three looks pretty darn good.
That is nice. Who's their backs? They got
Marlon Mack, Nyheim Hines, Jordan Wilkins, and Spencer Ware.
Yeah, so they got plenty. So
they got a stable of guys. They can all step in there. Nobody's really outstanding, but they can get the job done.
Mack was pretty solid last year.
Yeah, he did. He had Nyheim Hines wasn't bad either, especially as a change of pace guy, catching it out of the backfield. And Spencer Ware's had some solid years with Kansas City. Hell, he was their starter for a while until he got hurt and Damian Williams came in to take the job.
All right, I like that. I like Indy a lot more than I like the Saints. So far, Westland is sitting at a so-so for me.
And then three is the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm sorry, the Philadelphia Eagles.
Oh, nice. You know,
he's got their receiving core as an A-. He's really liking what they've done there. Obviously, Zach Ertz is a stud.
Yeah, badass.
Alshon Jeffrey. Now, Alshon Jeffrey was not as good with Carson Wentz as he was with Nick Foles.
Yeah, and he keeps getting older.
And they brought back DeSean Jackson.
That's right. I forgot they got
DJX. I do think DeSean Jackson can make some sweet music with Carson Wentz. He likes throwing the deep ball, and that's DJX's strength.
Yeah, I mean, you need that speed factor. They lacked that last year, so just having that way. I mean, we talked about earlier with the Cowboys with Pollard. Just having a guy on your offense with that sort of speed that the defense has to constantly respect opens things up tremendously. They still have Aguilar there in the slot. I think they still have Jordan Matthews. So, yeah, they got a couple of guys.
I don't know if they still have Jordan Matthews. He's not listed here. You're right about Aguilar. I don't think they have Matthews. I think they signed him to a one-year deal, and he's a free agent still.
Well, the other thing they do.
And they drafted that Stanford receiver, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, and they've got Dallas Goedert.
That's what I was going to say, is they have the double tight end situation where Ertz is one of the best in the league, and then Goedert showed some promise as a rookie. Two guys that can not only block, but they can also really stretch the field, catch the ball well, come over the middle, the seam. They threaten defenses in a multitude of ways. We talked about it a few weeks ago on the podcast. Warren Sharp, at Sharp Football, on Twitter, former engineer, brilliant human being, decided, bleep this, I want to go do this stuff. I want to be a numbers guy, analytical guy for football. Teams are actually using him as an advisor. He is sort of like a third-party advisor for like multiple NFL teams. He's a brilliant mind. He talks about how the NFL is going towards you got to have not just one, but you got to have two tight ends that can do it all and have them on the field at the same time. There's nothing more of a mismatch than a tight end who you're not sure if he's going to block, not sure if he's going to run down the seam, or just go 4 yards and catch the ball. Either way, they have two guys at the tight end position that are studs. They are progressive. Harry Roseman's a stud. They went and go get Andre Diller to shore up that offensive line. They still have Jason Peters. They still have Kelsey at the center position.
Lane Johnson.
I mean, really, I think the main thing for them, and I like Doug Peterson as a head coach. Offensively, he's smart.
No, their offense is looking good. The only question mark for me is that Wentz, Jeffrey, and then Wentz's health.
Wentz's health, yeah. And I think that's really the biggest question mark because I like Doug Peterson, and especially that was one of the best coaching jobs of the year last year. Taking a team who had just won the Super Bowl, you have a Super Bowl hangover, and they partied hard all freaking offseason. They were celebrating that thing so hard.
First and last time they'll ever win one.
And they were injury-laden last year. Yeah, they did. They across the board.
And they had a ton of big injuries the year they won the Super Bowl and overcame.
You're right. Offensively and defensively, and the only way you can overcome injuries besides just having phenomenal depth, which credit to Howie Roseman, he's put together quite the roster for them to allow for it. But you also just have to have fantastic coaching to be able to overcome that kind of stuff. They did it. I think the Eagles are a force to be reckoned with as long as Wentz can stay healthy.
Four might be a surprise. It's not a team that you've even listed yet.
Okay. All right.
And it's another
like
NFC team. So I'll
NFC.
I'll help you out there. It is an NFC team.
Good NFC offense.
Think of an offense that has been pretty darn good the last decade. They were really good 3 years ago.
Let's go NFC. I would say the Packers? No.
Not the Packers.
The Falcons?
The Falcons, yes.
Nice.
The Falcons are four, obviously.
Matty Ice.
Matt Ryan got an A- grade. They lose Tevin Coleman, but they've got Devontae Freeman still and Ito Smith. Their receiving core is stacked with Julio, Calvin Ridley, Mohamed Sanu, excuse me. At tight end, they've still got Austin Hooper, who's solid. He's all right. The offensive line, I think, was the question mark there, but they drafted Caleb McGarry to be kind of a plug-and-play dude. They've got Jake Matthews
as well.
Didn't
they draft Lindstrom as
well? Yeah, Chris Lindstrom.
They just bolstered that O-line like crazy.
They've got two new guys in their center and guard combo to come on in and start for them, similar to what the Vikings did, trying to address that offensive line. So they moved that up to a B-. So them at four. I don't think I'd put the Falcons ahead of the Rams, though, which he has, or the Chiefs, which he has. The Browns are at seven. The teams that come in 8 through 10, you already mentioned the Packers. They're at 10. with Rodgers, Aaron Jones, and Jamal Williams. That tandem at running back gets a B-. The receiving corps gets a B, which I think is pretty darn kind.
Who the hell other than
because
Devontae
other than
Adams,
Devontae Adams,
Vontaze Scantling?
I mean, yeah, they're worse than the Saints. They've got Geronimo Allison.
Geronimo.
Marquez Valdez Scantling. They still have Jimmy Bleepin' Graham, and they did draft Jay Sternberger. The other one is
I forgot they got that Sternberger.
Equanimeous St. Brown.
And wait, so they have a St. Brown, they have a Vontaze Scantling, and they have a Geronimo.
Yes.
All right, nice.
And their offensive line, you got a B-plus score, which also, I mean, aside, David Bakhtiari is pretty darn good. Brian Bulaga is solid. Otherwise, man, I don't know. They've got
you
a bunch
Aaron
of aging
Rodgers,
guys.
Wasn't he in Game of Thrones? Didn't he get blown up? They got a slip of that.
I didn't even notice him if it weren't for social media that said that he was in the episode.
Yeah, well, same.
And then 8-9-8 is the L.A. Chargers, who do have an outstanding offense.
Phil.
The only question mark for them is that line. The line gets a C. It's not very good. The rest of them are stacked. I mean, obviously, Phillip Rivers gets a B+. I'd give him an A- personally. Their backfield gets an A- with Gordon, Eckler, and Justin Jackson even stepped up and had some good games due to injury at the end of last year.
J-Jax.
And then the receiving core gets a B+ with Keenan Allen. A lot of people think Mike Williams could be a breakout star this year. And then Hunter Henry coming back at tight end from injury. He was a touchdown machine 2 years ago, so he could be that heir apparent to Antonio Gates.
And if you ask Stephen A. Smith, he was a touchdown machine last year.
Yeah, well, Stephen A. didn't know what he was talking about. And then number 9, even despite losing their top wide receiver and running back over the last few years, is the Pittsburgh Steelers.
The Pittsburgh Steelers?
Yeah, the B+, Ben Roethlisberger, James Conner, Jalen Samuel get a B at the backfield.
They still got Juju?
They gave Juju a B along
nice.
With Dante Moncrief, Deontay Johnson, our boy Vance McDonald, James Washington, and Ryan Switzer. And then a B+ for the offensive line. An offensive line that actually has gotten a lot better throughout the years with Alejandro Villanueva, David DeCastro, Ramon Foster, Marquise Pouncey. They're a solid line.
Yeah, I think they're a little overrated.
Would you put the Packers ahead of the Steelers?
No, I would have the
so
Steelers.
So you like that at 9-10 there?
I
Is
don't
there
like
a team
them at
not
9-10
on this list that you
would
have put
like,
on it?
I feel like I like both of them out of the top 10, to be honest with
Who
you.
Who would you have put on?
God, now that is
that's
a, tough
a great that's a
for
good
me.
Question, right?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Because I mean, otherwise the Patriots aren't on this list.
I was gonna say the Patriots aren't on there, and I think that's always an option.
Right.
So if other than that, maybe let's see, if Garoppolo can get his life together,
there's weapons there.
There's
in
weapons
San Francisco.
There. And
I like what they've done with the backfield.
Shanahan is a stud.
And the offensive line though is still a question mark. Like I don't know. There's a lot of ifs in projections, and this is a list for projecting next year, but there's too many question marks for me with the 49ers to necessarily put them ahead of any of these teams,
but
in my opinion.
My biggest bone to pick, I think, is Saints at 1 with having no weapons and Drew Brees with a right arm that's about to fall off.
I also think the Rams at 5 and the Chiefs at 6, even without Tyreek Hill,
yeah, that's bleep hole level.
They're too low.
That is masterful disgrace right there.
The one he got right is one that I don't think a lot of people would agree on, but putting the Colts at 2. I like what the Colts offense is looking like for next year.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you there. Frank Reich, he's a stud coach. I think Andrew Luck, due for another badass season, finally has a couple of weapons around him. Even now, it's still not like, holy crap, but it's way better than he's ever had. So as long as they can protect Andrew Luck, they are going to be awesome. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think my biggest issue is the Saints at 1.
What about the Houston Texans? That's one of the teams that I think maybe you could make a case for.
I like Deshaun Watson so much that I'd be willing to make a case and throw him in there. But it's just so hard to trust the butt chin of Bill O'Brien.
They can
and
be so explosive,
that offensive
though.
Line.
When Will Fuller is healthy for that handful of games.
Yeah, he's going to give you four big ones.
He makes plays. DeAndre Hopkins, the best receiver in football, not named Julio Jones.
Julio Jones.
Jones?
Correct.
Yeah. So and Lamar Miller's still a solid running back, and they got Deontay Foreman.
Yeah, I think if I put him in there, it's literally only because I think Deshaun Watson is cream of the crop badass. That's it. I don't think they got much around him.
Look,
I mean,
I'm just trying to give you options because you said that you would take off both the Steelers and Packers.
Well, and then now that I'm reevaluating things and thinking about, I mean, I don't know if Russell Wilson does something crazy and freaking DK Metcalf ends up being a badass for Seattle. But, yeah, I mean, now that I really think about it, well, I'll tell you what, if Kellen Moore can do anything great for the Cowboys offense, the only thing the Cowboys offense is missing in terms of personnel to me is just an athletic seam threat, tight end, a Zach Ertz, a Travis Kelce, one of those kind of guys that is just awesome. Otherwise, I think personnel-wise, Cowboys have it all. Just can they schematically do what you need them to do, and hopefully Kellen Moore, Mr. Multiple, will get that done for them, and maybe they can go top 10, but their red zone woes obviously issues. So bottom line is you go with Aaron Rodgers in the top 10, sure. I mean, that's always relatively safe. And then what was the other one? It was Pittsburgh. Yeah, you go with a team
Pittsburgh at
that
nine.
Is just usually going to be in there. Roethlisberger, even though he's fallen off a decent amount.
Yeah, so you had Packers at 10, Steelers at 9, Chargers at 8, Browns at 7, Chiefs at 6, the Rams at 5, Falcons at 4, Eagles at 3, Colts at 2, and the Saints projected to be the number one offense for the upcoming 2019 NFL season, according to Chris Wessling of NFL.com.
All right, Chris Wessling, we're gonna hold you to it, pal.
Yeah, we'll see how that
Saints,
goes.
Saints, my belief.
I'm putting my Cowboys in the top 10, baby. I ain't looking back. I think.
Oh, did we mention Josh Rosen and the Dolphins? Because
you know what? I think Rosen and the Dolphins and maybe a Kyler Murray and the Cardinals could sneak
potential.
In there.
Potential.
It's a new year. It's a new league, baby. Everybody's got hope. We are the Nosebleed Seats Podcast, the show everyone can afford to listen to. I'm Zach Wolchuk alongside Eric Chiafalo. You can follow me on Twitter at Zach Wolchuk. That's at ZachWolchuk. You can follow Eric at Chiafalo Sports. That's Chiafolo Sports.
You just butchered the hell out of that.
That's wrong.
It's Chiafalo.
Did I say A?
You said Chiafolo.
Yeah. All right. Spell it again for them.
No. Just continue.
All right. Well, those are our handles. Be sure to join the conversation at PFN365. That's the Pro Football Network on Twitter. Listen to our podcast on Apple, iTunes, as well as Podbeam, Apple News, wherever you can consume your content. We appreciate it. Rate us, subscribe, get those numbers up, baby. We'll see you next week for some more NFL action. Until then, you're going home with the nosebleed seats. Hugs and hand pounds, everybody. And remember, stay composed.
You jerk. You absolute, complete, and utter jackass.